And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's and Wickles Pickles. This is your host, Clint Lamb, sitting here once again with Brett Hudson.
Wickles are wickedly delicious pickles, relishes, okras, and much more. Wickles are proud to be Alabama-owned and made using a family recipe that is 90 years in the making. From Saturday sandwiches to Christmas dinner, their secret recipe used to be reserved for family and friends who were lucky enough to get a jar, but since 1998, they've been bringing the sweet heat and bold and tangy recipes to your home. Go to WicklesPickles.com or find them in the pickle aisle of your local grocery store. Wickles Pickles, let's get wicked. I had to make a trip to Publix on Monday, the day of the national title game. Had to get a pub sub for lunch, man. You on that pub sub life?
I love the pub sub.
Yeah.
Huge pub sub.
The chicken tender sub was on sale for
That's the only one I get.
Yeah, so I had to hop on that while I was on the while it was on sale, and of course while I was in the grocery store, I had to get a couple other things because, as I've mentioned a few times, a wife is incredibly pregnant with twins right now. So when I can make life easier for her, I try. And on that list was Wickles Pickles, as they almost always are.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of which, we talked a little bit about the review that we got from one very happy person on Twitter, if I can find it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about this.
So, James McInvale? Man, I'm so sorry if I'm botching your last name.
We tried. James. Well, he tried.
Yeah, I've always been terrible with him. But yeah, he said that he was had never heard of Wickles Pickles prior to the podcast, but he opened the refrigerator last night, whenever night that was, which was Saturday, so Friday night. Noticed that there were some jars in there. Apparently his wife, big Wickles Pickles fan, and they got into the conversation about how he needs to grocery shop more with her, know a little bit more about what's going on in the kitchen, which is fair. But he also wanted us to let Wickles know that, you know, the brand is spreading. I know that certainly with me, I'm actually kind of upset that it took me this long to realize just how good Wickles Pickles were. They're the ones, I can officially say, they're the ones that got me back on the pickle train after being off of it for a very long time. National championship talk.
Let's go ahead and shift. So there was a football game Monday night, right?
A lot of Alabama fans protested, if I'm not mistaken, or at least they said they were going to.
Yeah.
Whether they did or didn't, I don't know. It's very hard to not watch what is supposed to be a really good college football game, especially
when it was a really good college football
game. And especially when it's the last one of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brett, what'd you think, man?
I thought it was interesting that Clemson just went after Joe Burrow. And I can see where that's kind of a difficult spot for Brent Venables to be in, because on one side, you've got all this film of Joe Burrow escaping almost every blitz that comes at him. He's very good in the pocket. He's good at all of those things. You can see where someone like Brent Venables would think, I want to blitz this guy, but he avoids blitzes like crazy. And these wide receivers are so good that if I put my guys in one-on-ones, they're in danger of losing them more often than they win them, and that's probably going to lead to a loss. But the other side of that coin is they haven't seen a blitzing team as good as us. They haven't seen dudes like we got. They haven't seen schemes like we got, and we might actually be able to impact him with our set of blitz packages. And that was clearly his idea, that being Brent Venables. And it worked for about a quarter, right?
Well, they were in some tough situations early in that game with them, you know, Clemson electing to punt after the first possession.
Did you think about me when Clemson punted twice inside the 45?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And
yeah,
my initial thought when they punted it, and it was more so to be funny, but LSU's going to score regardless. Why are you punting it to them? You know, the team that punts, you know, 2-3 times in this game is probably going to lose. But give Clemson a lot of credit. They played defense really well to begin that game when they had Joe Burrow and LSU's offense in some tough positions.
Yep. And then once LSU got rolling, as they've done pretty much all year, once they open, to use some boxing analogies, like once they open up the cut, they attack it. They attack it, they attack it, they attack it, and it turns into a big gash over your left eye, and you can't see anymore. That's what they do, and that's what drove me most crazy about the decisions to punt twice early in that game. I'm gonna pull up the play-by-play right here. So Clemson, they got the ball to the 35, but then took a delay of game to punt. And then they got the ball to the 37 and punted again. So here's what ultimately happened. Clemson got the ball to the 35, took a delay of game and punted. They got the ball back on the 42. So technically they only lost 2 yards of field position, but really they lost 7.
Right.
And then they got the ball to the 37 and punted. And they got the ball back on their own 33. So they lost, what, 30 yards of field position right there?
Yeah.
Is that math right?
And then was that the drive they ended up scoring on?
And then they ended up scoring.
Yeah.
From their own 33. So if you've got the offense, and we know this offense is ridiculously talented, they've got weapons at every position group. If your offense is good enough, why not just do it when you're in an advantageous field position? I understand that it's 4th and 18. No. Yeah, 4th and 18 on the 35. You're not going to go for it there. Kick the field goal.
Kick the field goal.
Especially because homeboy made a 52-yard field goal later in the game.
Yeah, so he's very capable.
I understand that Clemson's had their struggles field goal kicking this year, but if you're going to let him attempt a 52-yarder in the second quarter, why wouldn't you let him attempt a 52-yarder on the first possession of the game?
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense to me, and all of that folds into the point you were making about how this LSU offense scores. You can't do anything about that for the most part. They are going to put a bunch of points on the board. Isn't Auburn the only team to hold them under 30?
Yes.
They put a bunch of points on the board. So why are you playing field position against a team that demands you score with them?
Yes.
It doesn't make sense to me. And I mean, that's not the reason they lost the game. I mean, they lost by, what,
17?
They lost by 17. That probably cost them 10-ish points. So do with it what you will, but the game demanded points. LSU demands points, and you had opportunities for points, and you said no.
Yeah, and you know that was my initial thought as well. Granted, I didn't expect Clemson's defense to have that much success early. Now, like I said, I mean, when you're backed up and you're on your, you know, within your own 5-yard line or closer to your own end zone, that's difficult. That's a difficult spot to be in, even for a Joe Burrow led offense. And you know, there had to be some nerves. I mean, you think for Joe Burrow, I mean, this is by far, this is what he continually talked about, is I didn't dream of being an NFL quarterback. I dreamed of being a national championship winning quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure for this particular game, he ended up responding well and bouncing back. But I'm sure there were some nerves involved early in the game. He didn't look great. He looked very human and pedestrian, but the guy bounced back. I mean, 31 of 49 for 463 yards and 5 touchdowns through the air total, because he added 58 yards and another touchdown on the ground. 500 plus yards of offense, 6 total touchdowns in the national championship against the number 2 ranked defense in the country. Granted, Clemson had not played too many teams. In fact, they had only played one other team that was not essentially a high school team prior to this game. So the stats are going to be a little bit skewed, make that defense look a little bit better than it was. We all talked about all year after losing all that they did from last year. You know, all those defensive linemen, Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence, Austin Bryant, mm-hmm. Cleland Farrell. I mean, they had tons of losses on defense. And we wondered, you know, how were they going to respond? We had not seen a Clemson team have to reload. And for pretty much all year, they looked like they responded well, and they had just reloaded on defense instead of having to rebuild. But this was a game where clearly you saw they were not ready to handle an offense. And to be fair, no other defense was ready to handle an LSU offense outside of Auburn's, you know, all season. To your point about them blitzing Joe Burrow, because I thought that was interesting early on, but then I also realized, and they actually brought up a statistic talking about this, Burrow was completing like 90% of his passes when dropping 8 and rushing 3. So there was no such thing as stopping Joe Burrow for 4 quarters this season. You just couldn't. It didn't really matter what you did, because you're right. When you're throwing blitzes at him, he's excellent. He can avoid the pressure. He finds guys downfield. He had a great chemistry with his receivers as far as, you know, having to improvise and things like that. But then also, you can't drop 8 because he's going to pick you apart that way too.
Right.
The offensive line was the Joe Moore Award winner, mm-hmm. A good group of guys. I think there were a little bit overrated, but I still think that they were a really good offensive line. So it was really pick your poison with that LSU passing game.
And what did you think of how Clemson used the run game in this?
And what do you mean?
In terms of how often they used it and how they turned, how they actually distributed their rushing attempts. And what I mean by that is Etienne had 15 carries, Lawrence had 10.
Lawrence was surprisingly a very good rusher last night.
Yes, it wasn't a drawback to the offense by any stretch. I guess I just anticipated Travis Etienne to have more than 15 carries for 78 yards and a touchdown at the end of this game.
Yeah. Now, granted, he did exceed the 20-touch mark with 5 receptions for 36 yards. He got him involved in the passing game as well. But I agree. With this being playing in front of his hometown, with as electric as he's been all season, to me, with the way Trevor Lawrence was playing, he had a couple of wild throws Trevor Lawrence is going to in every game, but did he not look very pedestrian last night?
Trevor Lawrence?
Yes.
It wasn't a standout performance by any stretch of the imagination.
No touchdowns, no interceptions, but no touchdowns. Completed less than 50% of his balls. Like I said, he had some great throws. There were some drops in there. LSU early on was the team that was dropping a lot of passes. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow was either not throwing an accurate ball or he was throwing an accurate ball and the receivers weren't catching it. And that's really what, for the first couple drives, it seems like with LSU, and that's where they really started to pick things up. But just Trevor Lawrence, Justin Ross, T. Higgins, Galloway, the tight end. I mean, he has weapons. And the offensive line, they replaced some guys from last season. I don't think they were as good. But just watching that game, this idea that Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be one of the greatest NFL prospects of all time, that's a little premature until he can get the consistency factor down. LSU, in comparison to Alabama last season, and this is where I think made the biggest difference in the game, Alabama could not get any sort of consistent pass rush on Trevor Lawrence last season in the national championship. Especially, Quinn Williams was really their only interior presence as far as a pass rush. They kind of took him out of the equation. Alabama didn't have Terrell Lewis. They didn't have Christian Miller. He was out for the game. Anthony Jennings made a lot of strides this season as a pass rusher. He was kind of limited, but he was really their only big option they had besides a true freshman in Ayabi Anoma. But they couldn't get any sort of consistent pass rush. They didn't force Trevor Lawrence to play like a true freshman, and they let him get comfortable. I feel like LSU never really let Trevor Lawrence get comfortable, and I think that really helped them. Michael Divinity Jr. was back. Mm-hmm. Really across the board, I think they did a pretty good job. There were a few very acrobatic catches from the Clemson receivers, as to be expected. But overall, just I think that LSU and Dave Aranda, that defense has gotten knocked a lot this season. And I feel like that from a talent standpoint and from the way that they started playing against Texas A&M, against Oklahoma, and obviously against Clemson, they really showed a lot of growth down the stretch.
I mean, did we not try to make that point earlier in the season? I mean, I know that. I mean, I'm sure we joined in piling on them after the Bama and Ole Miss games, where they were pretty well decimated, and then even after Vanderbilt, when they inexplicably gave up like 31 to Vandy, right? Yes, or was it 38? Whatever it was, that was weird. But they got better over time, and I didn't watch every single LSU game this year, so I'm not going to pretend to know what it was that made this defense better over time, but it clearly did. It clearly improved in the final four games of the year, Texas A&M, Georgia, and the SEC championship game, although that one doesn't count because Georgia doesn't have an offense, or at least they don't play it.
Fair.
They don't attempt to. Oklahoma in the semi and then Clemson in the national title game, they showed that their defense had improved over the course of the season, and when you have an offense as preposterously good is this one, just consistent improvement out of your defense is enough. Because put it this way, the better team won that game last night, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think no that doubt. Tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
I thought the better team won that game last night.
I was it was very confusing that the line started off at 7. I think when I woke up yesterday, the line had moved to 5.5. It continued to drop all the way up until kickoff. It finished at LSU minus four. The over-under continued to drop several points. I think it went from something like 69 down to, or maybe it was 68, down to 66. And to me, it just, neither one of those things was making much sense.
No.
And, you know, you always got to wonder, you know, what does Vegas know that we don't? And I was very confident in LSU until I started seeing that line moving. I'm like, man, something's got to be going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. But couldn't find out Vegas was wrong, or those big money guys who bet at the last second really moved the line. Mm-hmm. A point or two, half a point or a point right before the game. I mean, they were wrong on the under, over. They were wrong on LSU or the actual outcome. So I just found that very interesting. A lot of people thought Clemson was better than they were. And this is not to say Clemson's not a good team, but guys, Cecil and I've talked. I know you've talked with Cecil. And he continues to make the point, and he made the point as we were talking, as I was helping them record their basketball podcast earlier. Clemson is exactly who Cecil thought they were back in November and who he said that he thought they were, which is a team that was a good team, but there are a lot of different SEC teams that could have gone undefeated with Clemson's schedule. A lot. I mean, I would sit here and say Alabama, LSU, Florida, probably Auburn, Georgia. You're talking about five, six teams just in the SEC that go undefeated with what, and at least get to the playoff with what Clemson did. And you can also make the argument they were able to kind of slip past Ohio State. The stuff about the penalties, yes, I disagree with some of those calls, but that happens in every game. It happened last night in LSU's favor. Mm-hmm. It kind of worked against Clemson last night, I guess you'd say. But this idea, the Dabo Swinney train of trying to push this, everybody's been disrespecting us. No one said that they weren't a good team. It's just people said, you haven't played anybody. And in the playoff, especially against LSU, they proved that they were a really good team, a playoff caliber team, but they weren't a national championship caliber team.
Well, see, I think the way people think, not playing anybody, quote unquote, is indicative of the quality of the team, which isn't true. But yeah. I think a lot of people think that way, and Twitter and everything else bears that to be true. And the thing that I don't like about it is, and 2018 season is the perfect example of this. This is a little reductive, but just follow the thought exercise. In 2018, Clemson was an A-plus team that ran buck wild all over a C-minus D-plus schedule. Alabama was an A-minus team that got the job done pretty well against a B to B-plus schedule.
Agreed.
When they met, the A-plus team is still better than the A-minus team.
Yes.
It's a little reductionist, but it's more or less true, right?
Yes.
So that's what I don't... I understand. I agree that Clemson didn't really have a strong schedule this year. I very much agree with that. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm also not disagreeing with the prospect that at least four or five SEC teams could have also gone 13-0 against that schedule. Very much.
But that does not mean that they were better than Clemson. It just is stating the obvious that they also would have went undefeated with the schedule. That is not us saying, oh, you know, Clemson doesn't beat Florida. They don't beat Auburn. They don't beat Georgia. I'm not saying that at all.
I just don't like the unilateral application of strength of schedule to quality of team that played said schedule.
Yes, agreed.
There is often a semblance of correlation to it, but it's not perfect. And Clemson has proven that time and time again over the last 3 or 4 years.
Well,
because the ACC hasn't been strong in pretty much any of that.
I want to get your response to this, because this is what a lot of people, because I brought up the fact that Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney both have the same number of playoff appearances. They both have the same number of national championship appearances. And with Clemson losing last night, they have the same number of national championship wins during the playoff era. I brought this up yesterday, and I said if Clemson wins last night, that would tip the scale during the playoff era, solely during the playoff era, in favor of Dabo Swinney, because he would have that one more national championship. He was able to get the job done in the national championship one more time than Nick Saban. Say, do with that what you will. Obviously, it didn't happen, but people were coming at me saying Clemson, because of their easy schedule, they aren't as banged up or fatigued by the time the college football. They only have to get up for one or two games in a year. This was my thoughts. A, you have an entire month to get healthy and better. Injuries can happen to Clemson too, even if you're playing Wake Forest or, you know, Boston College. You're playing a football game. Things can happen. Now, granted, are your starters resting in the fourth quarter a lot more? Sure. But you have an entire, even if you're worn out by the end of the regular season, you've got 4 weeks really to get your legs back under you. That's plenty enough time. The other thing too is I think it could actually hurt you when you don't play anybody. Because you haven't been tested. You haven't been hit in the mouth. When you've gone an entire season and you pretty much go out there and you can, you know, play a B-plus performance, you know, give it 80% of what you got and you're still killing folks, what happens when someone hits you in the mouth? You're not used to it. That can hurt you. This is not to say I think Dabo Swinney is a better coach than Nick Saban, especially all time. I mean, I think he's got a lot more time to prove that he potentially could be. I don't think he is. Obviously, I still think it's Nick Saban. But that was – I wanted to get your thoughts on that. As far as the easy schedule all season really helps Clemson.
To bolster your point about being beat up and how that could negatively impact you and how the schedule may or may not correlate to being beat up, I don't remember Dylan Moses getting injured against LSU. I don't remember Trey Sanders getting injured against Texas A&M. I don't remember Joshua McMillan getting injured against Auburn. I remember them being injured in football drills with no contact.
What a point.
Injuries happen in football all the time. How many times have we seen just the weirdest hit placed perfectly, or in this case, imperfectly, on a person, and that injure them and force them out for a couple weeks? That could happen against Alabama. It could happen against North Texas. It could happen against Clemson. It could happen against San Jose State.
It could happen against Mississippi State.
It sure can.
Which is what happened to the star quarterback. No one. I mean, yeah.
Nobody looks at that Mississippi State team as a juggernaut.
No, and Tennessee's where he got banged up the first time. Did anybody look at Tennessee as this huge juggernaut? No. So that
weird football things happen.
Absolutely.
Injuries are fluky. That is the hill that I will die on.
And I will say this. People do have a point when you're playing three quarters compared to playing four quarters for even half your games. That's more opportunities to get injuries.
That's fair.
That's an obvious statement. But that how? Tell me how many fourth quarter injuries happened to Alabama.
How many third quarters did Bama play this year?
Yeah. I mean, it just...
Three. They played three.
What do you mean?
They played three third quarters this year. LSU, Auburn, Michigan.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they played three third quarters this year.
Well, yeah.
And if you want to argue for Tennessee because the Vols kind of made that late comeback, and if not for Trayvon Diggs' pickup six, that might have been a different game. If you want to make that argument, I'm cool with that.
But, I would say fourth quarters than third quarters.
Yeah, I mean, did Bama really play all that much competitive games more than Clemson? Really?
I wouldn't say too many. They certainly did have a tougher schedule. What people will point to is the fact that those tough games, they dropped both of them. They're two toughest. But, you know, I would still say Texas A&M was by far Clemson's toughest game before Ohio State.
Yeah.
And that was Alabama's what? Third or fourth?
Yeah. I do wish we could have gotten Texas A&M and Virginia in a bowl game just to make that argument ironclad, because those were the two toughest games. Yeah. Clemson played before the playoff, right?
Yeah, and I mean, Florida handled Virginia pretty soundly, but yeah. Florida was also a pretty good team. I think they were a little bit overrated, but I, you know, who else are you going to put up there? Based off of their losses, they had some quality wins. You know, can't really say anything.
And to your other point about how not playing a strong schedule can end up hurting you in the long run, and when you do face somebody that's capable of punching you in the mouth, wasn't the first half against Ohio State more or less a manifestation of that?
Yes. Yes, a great point. And they responded well.
They responded well because they've been in that situation before, because this roster, this program, has been at the top of the top before. So even if they weren't accustomed to it in that 3 to 4 month span that we call a season, the team was capable and understanding of how to operate at that high a level. Right. So they were able to adjust to it quickly. Now, if it were Baylor, in that situation, they probably wouldn't be able to react to that very well. And then the strength of schedule thing would probably lead more. It would have more weight to it.
Right.
But I didn't see that as the case with Clemson, because Clemson has been there many a time over the last few years, much to Alabama's chagrin.
Right. And here's the thing. I know that I think what gets me in trouble sometimes, especially on Twitter, is that I'm just trying to come up with the biggest, you know, funny troll kind of tweets that I possibly can. I like to have fun with things. I've stated this multiple times. Some of those tweets probably make me look more like an Alabama homer than I really am. When it comes to football, I look at things very objectively, or at least I try to. And this is just one of those things. You know, this is meant as no disrespect to Nick Saban. When I made that tweet yesterday, I obviously still think he's the greatest coach of all time, even more so than Paul Bear Bryant. But to say just during the college football playoff era, Dabo Swinney and what he's done is very impressive. And for Bama fans, you know, one big thing that I get in response is I'm totally cool with that because he's an Alabama grad. He's a Bama guy too. So we pull for him, and that's great. Claim that however you want to. I'm totally cool with that. There's no doubt that what he's been able to do at Clemson is pretty special. And who's the odds-on favorite to win the national championship next season?
Them Tigers.
Them Tigers, and not the LSU Tigers.
No.
The Clemson Tigers.
Quote-unquote little old Clemson.
Yeah, which we'll kind of talk about that more here in a second, because what I want to do is take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about these two teams in particular, because we're going to have a whole separate podcast that we're going to record afterwards discussing Alabama season recap, talking about some losses they're going to be having and stuff, and you know, more so just season recap. But I want to talk a little bit about Clemson, a little bit about LSU, who they're going to be losing potentially, who we know is gone, and then maybe throw in some Georgias and Auburns as well. Some of the teams that everybody thinks can compete for the SEC, and then some of the other juggernauts in college football. So that's going to be coming up. We appreciate you guys listening in. This has been the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's and Wickles Pickles. And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's and Wiggles Pickles.
Can I get a quick shout out to Zaxby's real quick?
Yes, you can.
So over the weekend, the wife and I had Zaxby's for a meal at one point, and she'd never had the Zaxby's wings, to the best of my knowledge.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this. Longtime listeners of the podcast will remember this conversation, maybe, when we were talking about Zaxby's, and I asked you if you had a go-to order at Zaxby's, because Zaxby's is one of those places to me where I can get a bunch of different things and be really cool. It's not one of those fast food restaurants where I get one thing every single time I go. I get a bunch of different things. I recently diversified to the wings. Then I brought the missus on that train with me this weekend, and she enjoyed it. So I wanted to shout out Zaxby's for bringing yet another menu item that the Hudson family can enjoy. I think my daughters are going to be raised on Zaxby's, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. I certainly love Zaxby's. And I'll tell you what, DoorDash, that has been a big hit to my pocketbook.
I saw your tweet about DoorDash emailing you your DoorDash history.
And yeah, like I really want to be reminded how much fast food I got. And the funny part is everybody's like, dude, I don't know what you're sweating. It's, you got DoorDash 14 times. I'm like, yeah, I didn't discover DoorDash till a week was left in the in the year. I don't know what to tell you. Like, that was 14 times in a week and a half. I'm kidding, but it was a recent discovery towards the end of last year, so that is definitely not an accurate representation of how much I use DoorDash. It's just great on Sundays, you know, when any sort of weather excuse not to get out.
This is what I was getting at. Like, do you live a long way from these restaurants?
A long enough way where I don't feel like getting in my car and driving.
Like, how long? How far have you done Zaxby's on DoorDash?
That's the main one I do.
Okay, so how far away is your closest Zaxby's?
Down 31. I live in Homewood, so you're not getting any more specific than that. I ain't going to give you guys a chance to come and stalk me. But live in Homewood, hop on 31 from Lakeshore, and, you know, probably 3-4 miles maybe.
Dude.
It's just so easy, man, when you wake up and it's like, man,
dude,
I don't feel like getting out. Anytime it's a weather excuse, if it's raining like today, if I get back and I don't stop in and get something on the way, we spent too much time talking about this. We'll get to point being, I use DoorDash too much. But having this concept that someone can just bring me Zaxby's, I don't have to worry about getting out and dealing with it. I just pay a couple bucks, and those couple bucks definitely add up over time. They nickel and dime me to death is the problem.
Look, you don't have to put on like actual clothes.
Yeah, I know. Just
be in your PJs.
Hop into your
get in the car and go to Zaxby's. Hit the drive-thru.
Yeah.
Shout out the fried white cheddar bites, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Back to football. I think that's what this podcast is about. We tend to get it off on other things quite a bit.
We're just having fun here, y'all.
We are. We talk a lot about football. It's nice.
If it's not abundantly clear, we don't take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah, I'm never going to take. I don't care what people say.
Or football in general. So
yeah, I like having fun with everything.
This is fun.
If it offends you, I'm sorry. All right. So Clemson 25, LSU 42, 17 point victory for the Tigers over the Tigers.
The Bayou Bengals, we should say.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about, we'll start with LSU because they're, you know, obviously the top team in the country. Losing Joe Burrow, losing some other guys as well.
A lot.
A lot, potentially. But here's the thing, not a whole lot of seniors. I think Lloyd Cushenberry, I think is how you say his last name.
Uh-huh.
The center, he's gone. Damian Lewis, he's gone. The starting, I think, right guard. Outside of that, let's talk a little bit about, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Apparently, I learned that H is silent recently.
Yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
So, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
It's Louisiana, baby.
Good point. He is a junior, so he could potentially come out. Some people are speculating that he will. It is a very deep running back class. So, Willie, I don't know. You have Justin Jefferson, who is a junior. He went, you know, bonkers last night. Not quite Ja'Marr Chase level bonkers, but in that first round against Oklahoma, he had his big performance. So Justin Jefferson last night went 9 catches for 106 yards. He could potentially be gone. Defensively, LaVon Chasen, Michael Divinity Jr. is a senior. Chasen, I think, is a redshirt sophomore, so he could potentially have 2 more years of eligibility, but he could also go ahead and come out kind of like Quinnen Williams did.
Yes.
You have Patrick Queen and Jacob Phillips, excuse me. They're 2 main linebackers. Both those guys are extremely athletic.
Patrick Queen.
Yeah, Patrick Queen's who I said first, correct?
I think so.
Yeah. So Patrick Queen, I think, is the more likely of likely of the two to come out. I think both those are juniors. Grant Delpit gone, in my opinion. Should be the first safety off the board, depending on how you view Isaiah Simmons. I view him as a linebacker. So first safety off the board in Grant Delpit, and then Christian Fulton came back for a senior year. But, you know, that means that he's done now. So that's a lot, and especially if – I think Joe Brady just signed a contract extension.
Yes, they're working on that from Ross Dellinger's reporting.
Yeah, but there are also some NFL teams showing a lot of interest.
Like the Panthers.
The Panthers are one. There was another one, too. Might have been the Giants. Maybe it was anyways, point being, even if it's just one, do you think he goes to the NFL?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they've already done work on that extension.
Yeah. Yeah, and to stay is just essentially the passing game coordinator / co-offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, would you not want the entire keys to the offense? Well, the way things are called, he gets
kind of have it for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, he's got – Joe Burrow attempted 50 passes, close to 50 passes last night, so – he's getting plenty of work as far as being a play caller and you know, kind of his input in on the offense. That would be a huge loss for LSU if he were to leave, though, and which would really – it's already going to be interesting. Just losing Joe Burrow, you would think the scheme, the system has really been a huge factor in that. Does Miles Brennan, does he end up being the guy? Does Parrish, the 4-star dual threat, does he end up stepping up into that starting role? Do they go the grad transfer route.
Who would they go, though?
Derek King, maybe.
Does he really fit what they are trying to accomplish?
No, not really.
There?
But does Parrish? I mean, as far as what we saw from Joe Burrow, Parrish is much more of a dual threat guy. Not.
Well, I mean less in terms of the ability to run and more of just like the arm.
Well, that's right.
The passing concepts, like De'Aaron King, strikes me as a Baylor off as an Art Briles offense type quarterback.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
Since Newman from Wake Forest, right?
Yeah, Jamie Newman.
Jamie Newman has already gone to Georgia. He was basically the only grad transfer QB in the market at the time. Now De'Aaron King is mixing up the transfer portal a little bit, but I don't know that LSU really has the options there. I'd rather run it out there with Miles Brennan and give it a shot.
Yeah. That'll be a huge test to determine if LSU is back in the mix next season.
But I do think all of those losses explain why LSU is down to fourth in the national championship odds that were released on Monday morning by Bet Online.
Yeah, because
it's only 6-1. It's not like they're a huge long shot, but still, they're fourth behind Clemson at 9-4, Alabama at 7-2, and Ohio State at 9-2.
Well, Nick Farball, who covers the Pittsburgh Steelers for a couple of different publications, but I really like following him on Twitter.
Are you sure that's not a Jim Harbaugh burner account?
I don't think so. He really talks up the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I'm just
Steelers.
Going by the homonym kind of name deal.
Yeah. Well, he brought up the fact that he feels like Thaddeus Moss is going to come out. Now, granted, I prior to him saying that, I kind of just assumed Moss would come back. He's a little bit undersized, 6'2", 240, if I'm not mistaken. Really does a lot of good things. Had two touchdown catches last night. Randy Moss' son, obviously, every time you bring up Thaddeus, you got to bring up his dad, it seems like.
It is law.
Yeah.
It is literal law.
But that's another potential loss. We don't know with LSU because we don't know who's all leaving. If they lose a lot of these guys, that's crippling in a lot of ways, in my opinion. If they get pretty much all these guys to come back, except for maybe one or two, and then you lose Joe Burrow, it will mostly depend on the success of Miles Brennan or whoever steps up at quarterback. Let's talk about Clemson, because that is interesting. T. Higgins potentially could be gone, probably, if I had to guess. Justin Ross is only a sophomore. ETN, gone, probably. I don't know if he's a junior or a senior. I think he's a junior.
I think he's a junior.
Yeah, I think so. But he's probably gone either way. He should be one of the top running backs taken in the draft. Isaiah Simmons, who's one of the most, single most important defensive players in all of college football, and what you can do with him defensively, he's probably gone. So Clemson's going to be taking some hits too, but anytime you return, obviously your number one receiver in Justin Ross and your, generational talent quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, you're obviously going to be in the mix. What are your thoughts on Clemson?
I think this is where I kind of speak out of both sides of my mouth in terms of the schedule. I think their strength of schedule or lack thereof, depending on how you want to view it, makes their path to the playoff easy. What happens in the playoff, we'll see. But I don't have any doubt that they'll be back in the college football playoff in 2020, playing in either the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl on January 1st of 2021, because the schedule is that easy. I'll pull up the schedule just to make sure they don't have like a landmine non-conference game that could throw things off. Which, speaking of schedules, to wrap up the LSU portion of this, if they do work through some of those losses early in the year, they host Texas on week two, and then they have to go to the Swamp on October 10th. So that's two difficult spots in the first six games of their season for a team that might be trying to figure themselves out a little bit. That could damage LSU. Okay, Clemson in 2020. Their non-conference game is at Notre Dame.
Which is good. That's good for them.
Yeah.
That is great, actually. And I had, now that
you And then South Carolina, but, whatever.
Yeah.
Their road games in conference are Boston College, Florida State, Wake Forest, and Georgia Tech. Home games are Virginia, Syracuse, NC State, and Louisville.
The hope is that Georgia Tech can continue to improve.
Yeah, the ACC actually should be better next year.
Be better, not great. Yes.
No.
But Mike Norvell being at Florida State, you'd have to think that hopefully he gets that program back on track. That's really important for Clemson and for Florida State for obvious reasons. But then having I like what Jeff Collins is doing at Georgia Tech.
It's going to take him another year or two
just for them transition and all
but
of that.
Once they get there, the recruiting suggests they're going to be better than what they were at their best under Paul Johnson, which was one 10-win season sprinkled in with a bunch of 8 and 9-win years.
Yeah, Georgia's a hotbed for recruits. So, I mean, if you become that kind of number two program, you know, that's actually competing and you're in a Power 5 conference, yeah, that's good for Georgia Tech, and I think they have enough to be able to steal some of these guys.
Also, Clemson plays the Citadel next year.
Nice. Which Alabama did last year.
So maybe it's a 14. What was that halftime score?
Was it tied?
Yeah, it was tied, but what was it tied at? Was it 14-14?
Might have been.
Maybe we'll get a 14-14 scare out of the Citadel and Clemson next year.
That would be very interesting. all right, let's talk a little bit about, we only got, you know, because I didn't want to cover every single team, but just obviously these top playoff contending teams, I wanted Bama fans to get an idea of what they're losing and where they can kind of be at next season. Next one is Georgia. We already mentioned Jamie Newman, the Wake Forest quarterback, grad transfer, will be heading to Athens to play for the Bulldogs. Good quarterback, and I think for where Georgia was at, extremely important add. If they can get the right pieces around him, and I've said this, I am concerned about his performances against top defenses. I think, you know, his numbers did not look good against even defenses ranked in the top 60. But dual threat guy, some of that can be attributed to the fact that he's not going to have nearly as much talent at Wake Forest as he will at Georgia. So you got to take that into consideration. But he could have, and this is a huge, I understand, if everything goes right, and I'll reiterate, if everything goes right, he can have a Russell Wilson type of impact like Russell Wilson had on Wisconsin's program when he transferred from, technically I guess he was playing baseball, but, you know, the NC State, former NC State quarterback transferring to Wisconsin and ended up having an excellent season. I could see something similar, maybe not from an NFL prospect comparison standpoint, but from just an overall impact and numbers that he could put up if they get outside, you know, out of their own way.
Yeah.
Offensively, that's the big thing. You would hope bringing in Jamie Newman, they were like, we're going to change some stuff around. They have to. I mean, Kirby Smart's not, I mean, I hope he's not an idiot. But then you're also losing DeAndre Swift. You're losing Andrew Thomas, your starting left tackle. Isaiah Wilson, your starting right tackle. Ben Cleveland, your starting center. Solomon Kinsley, I think it's one of the two, starting guard. 4 of your 5 offensive linemen. Defensively, you're losing a couple of guys. What's your thoughts on Georgia?
My thoughts haven't changed. I'm not going to take them seriously as a national championship contender until they change how they play offense.
Which the hope
you're not going to prove that to me until October, November.
So you're in the same boat that everybody was in prior to this season with LSU's offense.
Yep.
The talking about changes. Hey, we've heard this. You know, same song and dance. Show me on the field, and then we'll start talking.
I'm not going to take Georgia seriously as a national championship contender until they change how they play offense.
Very, very fair.
Period. While we're on this subject, is the Pac-12 going to contribute to the national championship race next year? And I ask that sincerely because Oregon is clearly the best team out there, right? Since USC doesn't have its expletive together, and UCLA ain't it, Stanford seems to be in there diminishing.
Arizona State might be.
Is Arizona State good enough to win the national title?
No. I just meant from a Pac. They'll be involved in the Pac-12.
Yeah,
as far as
but
you know,
clearly.
Pac-12.
The team that might compete for a national championship out there is Oregon. Maybe Utah with Jake Bentley coming in as a grad transfer.
I still don't think so.
But I would probably lean Oregon, right? Have you seen Oregon's non-con schedule?
I haven't.
First 3 games of the year, all 3 at home, but still. North Dakota State, Ohio State, Hawaii. Why'd you do this to yourself?
Interesting.
Why? You're hosting North Dakota State and Ohio State in the first 2 games of the year, and then you have to run through a 9-game Pac-12 schedule, which is probably loaded with landmines. I haven't pulled it up yet. I will right now. I think the schedule is going to claim Oregon. Well, like, I don't think they're going to beat Ohio State.
Yeah,
they might not beat North Dakota State.
I still think they're going to be a really good team, but they're going to lose a couple of their key offensive linemen to the NFL. They're losing Justin Herbert. Their pass rush and their defense is going to be probably on a level that we haven't seen Oregon at in a very long time. They got a couple of really high-profile linebacker recruits, five-star guys. I could very much see them stumbling a couple times and being the best team in the Pac-12, but stumbling a couple times. Yeah,
exactly. So their Pac-12 schedule, their road games are against Arizona, Cal, Colorado, Oregon State, and Washington State. The home games are against Arizona State, Stanford, USC, and Washington. The Pac-12 schedule is rather agreeable. I mean, having Oregon State, Arizona, and Cal as three of your five conference road games is pretty solid. That's not bad. And Washington State in that mix, too. I know Pullman is weird, but they're obviously going through a head coaching change. It'd be fun if Oregon got out of having to play a Nick Rolovich coach team in Hawaii just to have to play a Nick Rolovich coach team at Washington State.
Yep.
That'd be interesting.
That would.
But that road schedule in the Pac-12 is relatively friendly, but you still host Ohio State and you host North Dakota State. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's hard for me to see Oregon not being a 10-2 best team in the Pac-12 kind of deal. And I, unless 2020 season just gets crazy off the rails and we have something reminiscent of 2007, I don't know that a 10-2 Oregon Pac-12 champ is going to get into the college football playoff in 2020, which more or less pushes the Pac-12 aside, unless Utah does what it did in 2019 again in 2020. So then you're talking about the SEC race with Bama, Georgia, LSU, Auburn, Florida. You're talking Clemson out of the ACC, and then you have Ohio State as the heavy favorite out of the Big Ten.
Oklahoma and Texas,
and then the Big 12, whether it's Oklahoma, Texas, or maybe Baylor can live in the afterglow of Matt Rule for a year. I don't know what's going on there. I doubt it too.
It'll probably be Oklahoma again, but Texas, you know, they continue. You know, Sam Ellinger is choosing to come back. I think that was the right call.
Very much so.
But yeah.
So I think it's, and maybe it's good for the sport, maybe it's bad, it's not for me to decide. I think it's going to be rather predictable, because unless Oregon is much, much better than I think they're going to be, I don't think they're going to get out of that better than 10-2. But I also think they're going to be the best team in the Pac-12. So they'll win the Pac-12 North. They'll go to the title games in Vegas starting next year, right? Mm-hmm. In that new stadium for the Las Vegas Raiders. So they'll go to Vegas and they'll win that game. And then what happens after that remains to be seen. But I do think the Pac-12 and Oregon's schedule is going to kind of get them out of this.
All right. So to wrap this up, a lot can change. A lot's going to change. This is a way too early prediction. Four teams in the college football playoff next year. Go. No pressure.
Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. LSU.
Okay. I definitely agree with three of those, and the interesting take on...
I'm dunking on Oklahoma right now. I get it. If the Sooners are a little bit better than I think they will be, then I can live with that, but I don't know. I'm going to pull up their schedule right now and see if there's a non-conference landmine in there for Oklahoma.
They're losing a couple of people.
Actually, no, I'm going to make it Oklahoma.
Is their schedule a joke?
So their toughest non-conference. Well, they have two non-conference games of note. They host Missouri State week one, whatever. Their non-conference games after that are hosting Tennessee and going to Army.
Interesting.
Returning that visit when Army came by on pay-per-view and took them to overtime. Home games in the Big 12 are Baylor, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and Kansas. Road games are Texas Tech, West Virginia, TCU, and Iowa State, with the Red River Shootout being in Dallas.
Right. Okay. I don't foresee I probably am going to go Oklahoma at this point, too.
Yeah.
And this will be interesting because it depends on what George does. It depends on what LSU does. We could have a scenario with both. You know, Clemson's not the national champion coming off of, you know, undefeated records and all like they were this year. So if they are undefeated, but they haven't really played anybody. Now, granted, it will really help them if they're playing Notre Dame. So knowing that, if they beat Notre Dame and beat them pretty soundly, they're probably in the college football playoff. Oklahoma will be interesting. If they go undefeated, you would think they're going to get in. But if a team like LSU loses a close one to Alabama or something, and that's their only loss, you know, just it'll depend on a lot of things. But I agree. I think that Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and then you're talking about one of the SEC teams, whichever emerges between LSU, Georgia, you know, potentially Florida. I think with Auburn, with what they're losing defensively, their defensive front, I'm still not just a huge believer in Bo Nix yet. I don't think they're going to be too much involved, but I think it'll be another SEC team and Oklahoma deciding who gets that fourth spot. Obviously, a lot can change, is going to change. Let's figure out who's coming back with who, you know, where. But I'm with you on that. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for another episode of the Bama Beat Podcast. Just want to let you guys know, starting next week, Cecil Hurt and Hunter Johnson, actually, will both be joining us on some football podcasts. You know, we're just with the schedule and the way that things worked out. With Cecil, you know, he's a busy man, and he does the basketball pod, does a great job with that. But it's been kind of me and Brett manning this ship, and we'll continue to, me and, you know, Brett and I, will continue to do at least one football podcast a week, just the two of us. But Cecil will definitely be getting back involved and doing at least one football podcast, and Hunter sometimes as well. Love getting their takes. So just wanted to let you guys know that. We appreciate you guys listening in, though. We really do. We hope to continue to get more feedback from you guys. We absolutely love it. You know, go leave a review, iTunes, really wherever you leave your reviews. Looking for 5 stars. If there's something that we can improve on, certainly let us know. Like I said, we appreciate you guys, and thank you again for listening into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's and Wickles Pickles.